Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Wrestling is Cool podcast. I'm Santi, that's Sancho, and today we're bringing you our top 10 moments of the year 2024. We did this last year for 2023, and we thought we'd bring it back. Sancho, 2024 is coming to an end. We are recording this on the 31st. Actually, we're 30 minutes away from it being New Year's Eve. How are you feeling? How are you feeling about the turn of the year here?
I do find it's kind of interesting that we are not only in our new year, but the WWE is about to turn a new leaf as well. So it feels like it's a whole new era in all facets of life.
It does feel like we're in like a bit of a reset. It almost feels like over the last couple of weeks, WWE has sort of been saving themselves for this moment. Because not only are we going to Netflix, but both shows are going to be going to 3 hours. So there's just going to be so much more. And you could be getting so much more, not just of WWE, but of the Wrestling Is Cool duo over on Patreon. Patreon.com/Santi's app, where you could be getting this episode 3 days earlier than everywhere else. Not only that, but you're going to be getting our Undertaker watch along. We are at WrestleMania 15 now.
Ooh.
We watched the Undertaker murder someone, Sancho. In a Hell in a Cell match. Yeah. And you can watch that over on the Patreon. You also get the Royal Rumble watch along. You just watched Royal Rumble 2010, right?
Not bad. Edge's return.
Was a solid one. You also get our 5 weekly Match Club watch alongs that you get to vote for, and the Raw reviews and the SmackDown reviews. So just so much more content that never appears on the YouTube or on any other feeds. So come check it out. Patreon.com/Santi's app. And if you're so inclined, if you're a $15 patron, you also get our movie nights, and we just had one. Oh, good Lord. Sancho, what was that god-awful movie you made us watch?
Okay, this is our second movie. The first time we did was Ready to Rumble. This one was Santa's Little Helper, starring The Miz and Paige. It's wrestling.
Bro, it was the worst Christmas movie I've ever seen in my life.
I mean,
name a worse one.
Yeah.
Name a worse one.
I can't. I mean, you can't. It's funny because I literally watched that Christmas movie, and the next night I watched 8-Bit Christmas. Have you seen the 8-Bit Christmas?
No.
Solid movie, dude. Mm. I recommend 8-Bit Christmas. It's about a kid trying to get a Nintendo, and that is my vibe. That is my vibe.
Can I say something controversial about a very famous Christmas movie? Sure. I just watched it. So it's on the tip.
Die Hard?
No. I'm not going to open up that can of worms. It's on the tip of my brain, so I have to say it. Tip of my brain. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Not that good. I thought I loved it. I had this
what
memory.
Happened?
I don't know, bro. I watched it this year and I'm like, this isn't funny. It's way slower than I thought. And I thought it was kind of ass.
It's not one of those movies that is like, ha ha, jokes every 5 seconds, brother.
That's what I remembered it as. So like, it did. It's no longer Santi certified.
No, it does have a lull in it. It does have a lull in the middle, which is like where he's like remnant, where he goes, gets stuck in the attic. That's where it kind of slows down a lot. And then it slows down to a halt. And then it picks back up when the cousin shows up. When he shows up in the RV, that's when it gets back up again. You know what I mean? And then the cat eats the electrical. There's a lot.
Even the pickup moments are slower than I remembered.
Well, I'm trying to say it's like very low class humor, disguised as a very sentimental family Christmas film. And that's where there's a joke in that itself. But at the end of the day, it's aging, but it's still great, brother. You've changed.
You're
brain rot humor. You're brain rot humor, brother.
Rotted to the core. So folks,
rotted to the core.
We've already mentioned here, we're going to be looking at our top 10 moments of the year. So the way that this is going to work is that we both brought in our top 10 moments, and we will share those top 10 moments, starting with number 10 and working our way up to number 1. And we'll kind of trade back and forth. I'll go, you go, you go, I go. Mm-hmm. Does that work?
Yes, and don't forget, if you're just new joining in, we did record a award show, a Wikis. So if you wanted to see what we thought was the best men's wrestler, women's wrestler, all that is already up live on all public services. Shall I begin?
Sure. Yeah. You begin. And what's okay? And what I guess one parameter is that we said no parameters. The one rule is that there are no rules. Yeah, we didn't. We did not plan this ahead of time, so I don't know what kind of moments each of us are coming with. Basically, what I'm saying is that you and I did not sit down to define what a moment is.
No.
It's possible that somebody here came with a match, somebody came here with a heel turn, somebody came here with a championship change. It's entirely, I guess, dealer's choice as to what you want to define what a moment is.
Yeah. Now, I want to point this out because we're just recording right after Raw that just happened, the last Raw in USA. Punk and Seth Rollins delivered. That was a great segment. It was a great moment. Punk's line about, I love working here, except for the guy that was running it. I was like, oh my God.
But he liked you. Oh.
All right. That stuff, so, I could eat off of that for days.
You know what I mean? Agree. I agree. Right, and which is funny though, you know, because you and I have always said that these two just put them in the ring together and let them talk. Not these asynchronous promos, and they finally did. And a whole and brother. Holy smokes, that was unbelievable. Anyways, Sancho, you're number 10.
All right, here's my number 10. And if you, one of yours in your top 10 is one of mine, I will say that. But also if one of my like honorable mentions. So number 10 is Chelsea Green taking the bump off the ladder at Money in the Bank.
Oh,
I think that was one of those moments that a lot of people realize that Chelsea Green can be a transcendent star. Like she could elevate herself to the level where she could get singles gold, where we wouldn't blink an eye if she became the first United States Women's Champion, where she could probably be a heavyweight champion. She could get up there, well, of course, with the help of her shenanigans and her heel work. But that right there solidified to me that she is down. Like, she's amazing. Like we've known this because we watch her in Match Club as Reclusa. We've seen her in various promotions. I've seen that bump again in different promotions previously because I thought it was, like, an amazing thing. But that moment right there, I was like, holy, dude, Chelsea's willing to put her body on the line, and she puts herself before others. Makes me want to root for her even more. So that is my number 10 moment of 2024.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where she came out looking like $1 million in a loss. Which I think is really important for a character like a Chelsea Green, where her job to a degree is to lose. She's a professional loser, and she does lose in ways that make it so that she isn't an afterthought, where you walk away from her loss talking about Chelsea Green. And that moment, that spot where she had the briefcase, there was this like silence, but also uproar of us thinking that Chelsea Green was going to have her moment, only to for it to be yanked away in one of like the more extreme moments of the year, is something that I do think is what set up Chelsea Green to become the darling of that United States Championship tournament. I feel like that's where it started. Would you agree?
100%. I mean, I kind of have this moment and her winning as kind of like a 10A and 10B.
Sure.
But definitely Chelsea Green, those are the that moment was the one that kind of turned the tide, where it went from she's a heel joke character into she could be a heel with an edge because she's willing to go that far for the business.
See, I actually, so I didn't have this moment. I feel like that's an interesting one to have because when I look at my list, I don't have any bumps. So this is what, this is what we meant. Like, we didn't define what a moment is. So right off the bat, you went in a different route that I did not go with. I don't have any like individual bumps.
Sancho.
Yeah, it had to be you. It had to be you. So I guess spoiler, I don't have that on my list. So it's just on yours.
I'm gonna tell Chelsea. I'm gonna tell her.
Here's my number 10. It's funny, we both started with women. I've got Bayley winning the Royal Rumble. I feel like in the hindsight, people are like, oh, Bayley. Bro, we all wanted Bayley to win. Literally, everybody was clamoring for Bayley to win. This was the darling that everyone clung onto. And it was cathartic and special to have the person that everyone collectively wanted to see have their moment actually win the Royal Rumble, because so many times we've seen WWE time and time and time again not give that moment to the darling that we want to see have that moment. So to see Bayley win the Rumble when we all felt she was so deserved, to see Bayley win the Rumble going basically the distance from number 3. And here's the thing, Sancho, just out of curiosity, I went back to look at my old Rumble reactions that I have on Instagram. And when Bailey's music hit at number three, I literally said, are you kidding me? They're really going to eliminate Bailey this quickly?
So yeah, that is a pretty early entrance.
It was Bailey, a really, guys. Really entrance for Bailey. And I don't think look, people wanted Bailey to win. People thought Bailey would win, but I don't think anybody had Bailey being the Iron Woman of that Rumble match at all in their bingo card. So when she came out so early, I thought it was a death sentence for wrestling fans that wanted Bailey to win. So to see her go the distance, to see her have that super tense final three on the apron with Jade Cargill and Liv Morgan, and to see Bailey win and have that huge moment in her career, I just thought was super special. They got the right winner in a great match. Great match. It's my number 10 of the year.
There's one of those things, like, as someone who's been watching Royal Rumbles, that she kind of went up against being an Iron Woman throughout the entire time. Not that many did it. Ric Flair, Rey Mysterio come to mind, that went the distance. Of course, he who should not be named, Chris Benoit, went that far. I named him. And then even that, a return is always like, if you're going to make a return like Liv Morgan at that, what was she, like 29, right?
Yeah.
If you come in at 29, that's a guaranteed win. I mean, Cena's done it before, Triple H has done it before, and the same kind of spot. And then you look at Jade Cargill, someone who's a monster in the making, someone who's a WrestleMania spot, you would easily be okay with Jade. Like, if they strapped the rocket to Jade Cargill, that would have been saying a lot. But to see Bailey get it at the time, I would definitely say that that's a high moment for sure.
Yeah, especially like in that final three, I was like, oh no, you can make a really strong case for those other two. Mm-hmm. I really was not expecting at that moment for WWE to pull the trigger on the thing that fans wanted, which was Bailey winning the Rumble. So that's my number 10. Shall I take number 9 here?
Sure, take it.
Take number 9. I'm wondering if you have this. I'm being a little bit overzealous with how I'm listing this so that I can encompass more things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, me too. I'm all over the board too.
Okay. I have the Backlash France crowd at number nine, whether it's the AJ Styles singing, the camera shaking during the introduction of AJ Styles for the championship match, the legendary Jey Uso match, how awesome they were for like the mundane things. Just a typical two count would elicit a song out of this crowd. Mm-hmm. I know some people love Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is my number 2 crowd of all time. I think this is my favorite crowd of all time. And I feel like it comes off the back that I'm a big football soccer fan. So to see that environment, that ecosystem in wrestling was so awesome.
Was this before or after your Colombian and Canada Cup or the Copa?
Oh, it was like right before. It was right before. Nice. So nice. I got to feel that ecosystem in real person, like in real life for Copa America, but then in real life. I don't know why I said it that way. That was weird.
IRP.
It just felt like two of my favorite things kind of meshing together, and something that I don't think can be replicated. And what's funny is that off the back of that show, how many times did we say, I wonder if Saudi Arabia is going to be able to live up to the Lyon crowd. I wonder if Glasgow is going to be able to live up to the Lyon crowd. I wonder if Berlin's going to be able to live up to the Lyon crowd. They like created a new bar. And I get it that this type of crowd wasn't the cup of tea for everybody. Some people felt like maybe they took too much over the show. That's not how I think. I felt like they elevated that show. They took the little B-tier show that could and made it into my favorite show of the year. Backlash, pound for pound, is my favorite PLE of the year.
That one is my moment number 6. Oh, I got it up there. I got it up there, man.
Did you hand pick a moment of the crowd, or did you just have the crowd?
Number 6 is AJ Styles in France. This intro, I don't think even John Cena could get that reaction out of the crowd.
No.
There's just no way.
Yeah, dude, I think it's this like weird, like perfect storm of AJ Styles being beloved, WWE mm-hmm. being there, AJ Styles being mm-hmm. in the main event, and then his moniker being the phenomenal one, and then all just randomly France having a party song about the word phenomenal. You can't replicate that. You can't recreate that perfect storm of things. And I know AJ Styles has been all over the world. There's no way he's gotten a reaction like that ever. Ever.
I would love to talk to him. I was going to say pit him down and talk to him about what was that meant, because he's never going to break kayfabe for now. He's never going to do that because he no-sold it.
Dude, yeah, the no-sell is crazy.
He didn't even smirk. He didn't even do any of that. He just sat there and chewed his gum. I cannot wait till Chris Van Vliet asks him that question about that moment. Because I think if there was nerves or energy and you could feel it, I think that's like at 100, right? That's like cranked to 100. You could feel that. Ooh, I'm surprised they didn't change. Like, they stuck with it. Cody was still a face and he was still a heel, because that crowd was white hot. Whitest of the hot for AJ. But yeah, it's my number six.
Yeah.
Give me chills thinking about it.
I'm with you, dude. I feel like I've watched the phenomenal chant like once a month since it's happened. Like, I'm not even kidding. I've watched it like once a month. I go back to it like routinely to re-experience that.
Can you imagine if Cody's like, well, I'll drop the belt to you.
Just like, yeah, off the cuff.
Because his crowd is so hot for
it. Dude, the pop for that would have been monumental. Anyways, let's hear your number nine.
Number nine. This one's going to be, actually, Cody is involved in this one. Well, his storyline, it's KO's pal driver to Randy Orton.
Oh, another spot.
Yeah. I live for the small moments, because I think like these, they kind of catapult a story and then launch pad something that Kevin Owens, when he first fought Cody, it was just because like, hey, I'm going to give you a chance because you earned it and you deserve it. And Kevin Owens went from a floundering character to like a babyface that always got worked by the bloodline to someone who's now a very scary heel. And that moment right there made him scary in my eyes, because the pile driver has been banned forever. It's a move that is so taboo in the WWE considering Stone Cold's injury. And for them to pull it out of nowhere and then make it matter so hardcore, I was like, it shows you how if WWE wanted to make something the most devastating thing in the world, they can. If one day, tomorrow, or on the Raw on Netflix, they decided to give Seth Rollins super kick meaning. Like, what if Seth Rollins decapitated someone? Just play with me here. And they banned the super kick. The WWE can do that. They have the ability to tell that story. They have the ability to sell it. And they sold the pile driver so well. And it's good to see an old school move like a pile driver sold that way. And I'm expecting like a DDT to be sold that way one day. But it's awesome that KO's pile driver not only put like on notice that the WWE could do storytelling really well, but made KO again a very scary heel to deal with, and at least gives Cody a solid foe. And it kind of feels like we've jump started into Cody's story more so than finishing a story and dealing with the bloodline. Like, Kevin Owens is a good formidable foe for Cody here.
Yeah.
Today.
I want to definitely talk more a little bit about like the meaning of that move within the storyline as well, with Randy Orton's injury, etc. But a unintended ripple effect of that pile driver was an insane amount of additional hatred towards AEW. Did you see? Did you see like the narrative online of just so many people being like, "See, this is how you're supposed to protect moves and finishers and pile drivers." And yeah, then I think that clip surfacing of Penta and Orange Cassidy giving themselves Canadian Destroyer after Canadian Destroyer. It had that kind of different effect of like demonstrating to us just how different the two wrestling organizations are in terms of the type of entertainment that they provide.
Yeah, I think AEW literally that week did a tombstone on stairs. But like I said, I didn't want to put that be the reason why that it was impactful, but I think it just shows you the juxtaposition in styles, like you said. And I think that, dude, AEW should be, I wanted to do this in our prediction part of this podcast, but I think AEW is turning the corner again. They're reloading. They're getting ready to go again, and I think they're going to start gathering a crowd that is kind of like into like a different kind of wrestling. And I think they lost their way a little bit because they were trying to chase the WWE. But I think now they got all their players ready to go, I think we're going to get a special year at AEW this year.
I sure hope so. I feel like 2025, if everything goes right, should be the best year in professional wrestling ever. If AEW gets their act together, oh man, we'll be feasting. Number eight. Sancho, yeah. Pass it back over to you.
Yes. So what was your number nine? Just want to make sure.
My number nine was Backlash France Crowd.
Ah, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I went with my number nine. My number eight is a special segment that let me know that with the addition of this wrestler, we're going to get special more segments. And this is kind of like this solidified everybody's hype around this wrestler. Like this let me know that this is a guy that has been carrying the era for a while, that's been known to be one of the best in the world, and that is Punk, Seth, and Drew. The three segment on Monday Night Raw showed that you could entertain people for about 30 minutes without any kind of wrestling. And it's just, if these three dudes, if they believe that they hate each other, and if they could speak clearly with the purpose and intention, like most of the promos back in the day were, you get something special. And that was what those three delivered. And it let me knew that Drew at that time could step up to the plate and hang with the big boys. And let me know that Seth has a different gear in him that is rare air when he clicks into, like he did in tonight's Monday Night Raw. And it solidified that Punk could bring the best out of everybody. I've been playing a lot of Marvel Rivals lately, all right? And Punk's that dude, when he ultimates into his promo and people could match him at that summit, you get some unforgettable segments ever. And I'm absolutely, that moment stuck with me forever. And it was really cool because it felt like they were just like, just go. Three of you, you hate each other, just go. And that's what we got. And we got some banger lines. And I think that that kind of, not only that, it kinda was fuel to the fire for Drew and Punk for the entire year. We gave it the best feud of the year. But as we see now, it's going to be even better for Punk and Seth going forward in 2025.
Right. Do you feel like that was promo of the year?
I don't know. I really like Drew and Punk inside the cage because they were like selling how scary this cage. That guy was security guard because they really sold how scary the cage was. Because he was, I think Punk said something of like, "I was afraid to come in here. My family, my sister, or whatever." He was talking about that aspect. Like they said that they didn't want me in this cage. So
they didn't want me in this cage.
No, he didn't say it like right. I it's hard to say. I would say pure wrestling, yes, but I don't want to give away my number one. So
okay. All right. No worries. I don't think, aside from Backlash France, so far we haven't had anything together.
Okay. What's this your is great. Number eight then, huh?
My number eight, I would be shocked if it's not in yours. My number eight is Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston absolutely obliterating Big E a couple of weeks ago on Monday Night Raw, turning heel, crushing hearts, kicking Big E out of the group. Oh my goodness. And I felt also like it made this top 10 list for me because of how much of a meme this was in our community, specifically with the Not Allowed, and just how much this built up from something that I really felt, Sancho. And obviously now with hindsight, it's like, oh, how could you not see it? I really felt that the Xavier Woods, Kofi Kingston stuff was garbage. I felt like it was bad. This stuff with Karrion Kross was not working for me. And I'm being honest with you. And we have the hindsight of the end result being fantastic, but I still stand by that it wasn't good. Like you saw the one of the 14 million different outcomes and it ended up being fantastic. But the groundwork that was being laid out, I thought was just really bad, really boring. And it felt like quicksand watching them go through the rigmarole week after week after week with Karrion Kross. Finally, when Karrion Kross kind of left the picture, things got interesting. Things started heating up. And I was like, okay, I think I'd like to get on board with this train because there are different trains. And then what was delivered to me was maybe my favorite heel turn of the entire year. I thought that that was absolutely brilliant. I'm a little concerned with how they're going about it now. They're turning almost into like one trick ponies. And I'm entertained by everything that they're doing right now. But at some point, we're going to need a little bit more substance. You know, we can't just be the guys that get booed. We're going to need they got plenty of runway with me right now. I'm still really entertained by it. But
yeah,
they can't turn into Butch, you know, like, oh, don't say that name, you know, and now like that's just his whole gimmick. That's his whole thing. I don't want the New Day's gimmick to just be we get booed. I want them to really grab this brass ring, to use that old analogy, and do something unforgettable with this heel run. We're still so early in it, right? And it's just kind of tough to see what, like, how these dots connect. But I'm incredibly optimistic, and I'm optimistic off the back of one of my favorite segments of the year, Big E Xavier Woods turning heel. So good. So what if you broke your neck? Oh.
Santi, you stumbled upon my number one, actually, right here.
Oh,
this is my number one moment of the year. I think the reason why I am very high on this moment, because it's something that I haven't seen in wrestling history ever. We stumbled upon a heel turn that involved no type of physical altercation that was still devastating. We seen a grown man got his heart broken on national television and be rejected by his boys of 10 years and to be put in that room, in that kind of vacuum of a situation with these three wrestlers was gut-wrenching. It was heartbreaking to go through that and to have no escape. We had to sit through that, and it was done so well, and the heel turn was unexpected. I know some people thought that it would be a physical heel turn. I even thought that they would hurt Big E in that situation.
We thought they would turn on each other. Remember? That was the big prevailing theory.
There were so many things that we thought this would be a Mania matchup. As of now, I know I'm early on this, but I'm still in love with this heel turn. And for it to be number one, it's because they were able to execute something that is probably harder to do in wrestling, to break someone's heart or to get ultimate heat or heel hate without physical violence. Like, that to me spoke volumes. And for, you have to think about it as well professionally, for Kofi and Xavier to be in this position for 10 years as a New Day, no doubt still probably making money on their merch, right? Comfortably. But for them to tell themselves, all right, we want to do something different. We need to change. We want to try something different. And I think that speaks volumes. Like, that is very admirable to do. Because we get often in this business, in all content creating, and just in general, we get comfortable. And I applaud that New Day did not want to get comfortable. And they kind of pulled out an ace up their sleeve that they can't go back on. You ever think about that? Like, you can't go back.
They let the genie out of the bottle. It's out.
Yeah. You can't go,
psych. Love
you, baby. Right? We can't do that. And this sets up so much more they could do. I do agree with you that New Day is not necessarily one note, but I think, like,
Right now it is. It's early. Oh, yeah. Right now it is.
So yeah. Early. But I think, like, what I'm kind of... You can't just not say what you want to say because one person boos and they go, oh, boo me. And I'm like, dude, just push through this, bad boy. Just spit it out, brother, how I feel throughout the entire time. But this is my number one moment. And I you could argue that the rest that I have below that should be number one. But I felt like it was such a unique thing that I have to applaud it.
Sure. I mean, I know it really stuck with you. I'm really... Yeah. Really, really curious as to where things go with Rey Mysterio, LWO, maybe even Penta being inserted into this. I don't know how. But one of the really unique things about this whole thing, Sancho, is it almost feels like they are trying to train the fans that you need to boo the New Day, because we spent like 10 years cheering for them. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, you guys need to boo the New Day, and we're going to show you that you need to boo the New Day, because Dominic Mysterio also thinks that they're messed up. Even their mom.
Jay does.
Even their mom, all right? Funny enough, we're off the back of Monday Night Raw, where Jey Uso interrupted the New Day. I also felt like that was symbolism of, like, you need to boo the New Day, because look at the guys you're booing, and now look at the super popular guy that everybody loves. Just kind of showing that dichotomy and difference between these two, and the difference in crowd reactions. It's pretty smart.
You think Roman? Well, you think, I think Xavier and Kofi would think the tribal chief, Roman, would side with them.
Dude, like, that'd be on, so dude. Fun. Bro, right? There's a moment where they go into the Bloodline locker room with Roman and Paul Heyman. Oh, brother, that would be
that would be
the cherry on top. But at some point, you got to do something with it with these two guys. It can't just be the, we hate them.
They could hurt Rey. and then
we hurt Rey Mysterio. Like Eddie. Oh, that Eddie.
They rip my mask off. They show my face. That's a no-no in lucha.
Have you done your number eight?
I have did. It was Punk, Seth, and Drew. I am on number seven, my friend.
Oh, I'm on number seven. It's my turn.
All right, go ahead.
All right. I have Dominic Mysterio betraying Rhea Ripley at SummerSlam 2024. Honestly, I kind of want to include that entire summer where the Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, Dominic Mysterio trifecta was...
She gives me tendies.
Oh, man. All of that was just so good. And I feel, Sancho, that this is one of those scenarios where Triple H tried to cook a brisket when he just needed to put a hot pocket in the microwave. We wanted
you've turned sour on it now?
I think everyone has. I've been probably the most patient with it out of a lot of people, but even now I'm like, I'm happy that this is ending at Raw Netflix. But
you think so? I think it's gonna be till Mania.
Maybe.
You thought I was crazy.
It could be, but they need to do something else. Anyways, back to this. This summer, dude, this was special. Remember how we would post our reactions and anything related to Liv Morgan, Dominic Mysterio would just millions of views, because this was what people had their eyes glued on. Liv Morgan playing like the seductress, the succubus, trying to remove everything that Rhea Ripley loved out of the equation, trying to take over the Judgment Day, take Dominic Mysterio, and then that having its major climax at SummerSlam with the reveal of Dominic Mysterio going heel squared, heel into heel, into a bigger heel. Brilliant. Honestly, it was so, so good. It was my favorite moment of that SummerSlam, if I'm being honest with you, like singular moment. And this is a SummerSlam where Roman Reigns came back. And my favorite thing out of that SummerSlam was Dominic Mysterio turning double heel on Rhea Ripley. I thought that it was so well executed, and all of it, the lead up leading to it, was so great. It's just been the follow up hasn't been particularly amazing as to what we saw in the summer.
True. This is my number five. This is my number five top moment of 2024. I think what made it so unique is we didn't expect it. It was being set up because remember there was like a Raw before it where Dom was like, I hate you, Liv.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be near you. You're so stupid. And then Liv like cried off into the arena. Like that was like one of the lasting moments. I think it was the go home for SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah. And then Rhea licked Dom's face as an approval. lick. Yeah. Like, gracias, mommy.
Yeah. There was a lot of viral moments, like you said, like just going through everything. And even Liv, like, Dom likes guys with girls that are just like me. We
don't need to explain to you what that is. You hear it. You know it. You know it.
You know it, you brain rotters. So there's that moment. But I think in the moment itself, the way they did it where Liv was shocked to be picked up by Dom, and there was a moment of shock that came across her face that she's being picked up, and they share like one of the most passionate kisses in WWE history that was
sloppy.
It was just so devastating. And then they cut to Rhea in the ring and she's just screaming her head off. And she's just so angry that she let this happen in front of her own eyes. And so good. So there's like compounding terror and anger in Rhea's face that it was so good. And I absolutely loved it. And it's good because you have to remember Rhea was unstoppable. She was untouchable. Mommy was just on top at all the time. And to see her fall from grace for a little bit, get knocked off the pedestal, some good stuff. And it just showed me as well that Dom did not need Rhea. That was huge. Like, one, Rhea did not need Dom.
We knew that.
But we needed to know, can Dom survive without mommy? And he did. And he is flying. This man's soaring. Tom Selleck wishes, man. Quick, favorite Dom moment of the year, not including this. Favorite Dom, like, moment. I'm going to go first just to give you a chance.
Go ahead.
Is him getting the big plate of chicken tendies and eating them. Best moment of Dom's career right there for me.
No, mine was definitely the, she lets me play PlayStation, she gives me tendies, because that was also where Damian Priest appears behind the Michael Myers style.
It was Austin, Texas. Good stuff, man. All right, so you went with your number seven.
Yeah, let's hear your number seven.
My number seven is Bronson Reed's six tsunamis to Seth Rollins.
You're a spot monkey. You're a spot monkey. That's what you are.
I am, dude. I'm the Diddy Kong, dude. Mm-hmm. I should not say that. Poor Diddy Kong deserves better. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't. What are you saying? Why does Diddy Kong deserve better? Please.
Chat, you let him know, chat. You let him know. Bronson Reed's Six Tsunamis was great because it came out of nowhere. We did not feel that Bronson Reed would ever be a main event or heel or sneak in, because at the time, SmackDown was one of those things where you could jump in and out of a kind of, we were like, SmackDown's great because all these mid-carders could fill in and slot into the heavyweight title or the undisputed title at any moment. Like the mid-card, we always talked about mid-card thriving that way during this year in early 2024, and Bronson Reed was never part of that. Bronson Reed wasn't never one of those guys that could slot into it. We said that Bronson Reed was Monster of the Week, that he would be a guy that could elevate someone's toughness, who can elevate a big splash moment or a big car crash moment. That was Bronson Reed's kind of role. And when he was able, when he was slotted to be in the Elimination Chamber at Perth, and he had to step out because I think of the birth of his kid, which is understandable, he felt like he was kind of being further down the totem pole. But Triple H literally strapped a rocket to his back, and Six Tsunamis later, he is a main eventer. Now, granted, he's hurt now, but him being part of the Solo Sikoa bloodline, it's all started with the Six Tsunamis. And I'm very excited to see Bronson Reed return. And I think that him, Seth Rollins, showing how devastating, not one, but two, not three, but four, but five, but Six Tsunamis, that means they could do it again. And they were doing it again. I mean, what, he did R-Truth, he did Miz, and I wanted him to do it to Pat McAfee so Pat McAfee could disappear for a while. It's just a great excuse to put someone on the shelf while building a Bronson Reed toughness.
Dude, that was such a special episode of Monday Night Raw. And with it having that particular segment as well, it was so, so great. Great follow-up to SummerSlam as well. Brilliant way to write off Seth Rollins. And what an instant catapult to relevance that was. From somebody that felt like they could be doing more with him to, I guess, that, to use that Cody Rhodes line, to go from undesirable to undeniable in the blink of an eye, in the blink of Six Tsunamis. It was absolutely incredible. I cannot wait to see Bronson Reed come back. I'm curious if he's going to be re-involved in the bloodline stuff. Is it going right back to Seth Rollins, whatever it might be. But it's always special when you see...
Or Punk.
Or Punk, sure. Because Punk took credit. Punk took credit for the ankle. It's always special to see to be part of and be able to witness the career moment, right? Because that happens once. It happens once for a WWE superstar, like the Punk one. Obviously, we know that's the pipe bomb. Batista, you could probably say like how the crazy Royal Rumble ended. There's always the moment, and this was Bronson Reed's moment, to the point where I think, like, let's talk 15 years down the line, 20 years down the line, where Bronson Reed maybe is somebody that's won world titles, maybe somebody that gets inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. This is in the montage. This is in the montage of his Hall of Fame ceremony.
That's my number seven. All right. What's your number six? Because remember, six and five and one been taken off the table.
Yeah, so just to remind everybody, your six was my number nine. You had the Backlash France crowd. But yes, specifically, you went AJ Styles.
Okay. Yep, and then my five was your seven, which is Dom's turn on the wheel, right? And then my number one was your number nine.
Right. Number six, give me a little bit of leeway here, okay?
Go ahead.
I'll
walk down the path.
Sure. I have Jordynne Grace appearing at the Women's Royal Rumble. Slash NXTNA. It just is something that, as somebody that's been watching wrestling as long as I have been watching, this seemed impossible to ever think about the WWE collaborating with active wrestlers of their competition in North America. Especially when you think of TNA in the early 2010s and the 2000s, when they were really trying to gun for WWE. TNA was dead in the water, and then they make a pretty big comeback in the 2020s. But to see Jordynne Grace, the TNA Women's or Knockouts Champion, appearing in the Royal Rumble, getting a huge pop, being treated like a star, Under Vince McMahon, I feel like we could all assume she would have gotten eliminated instantly. Face off with Bianca Belair, boom, done. We got to make our people look strong. No, she got to look strong. She had a nice run in the Rumble. And then we get to see her have a championship match against Jordan, against Roxanne Perez at NXT Battleground. And then we see the Rascals appear in from TNA into NXT. We see Joe Hendry, the most viral wrestler outside of the WWE, make an appearance in TNA and NXT and have a run there. And then you have people from NXT go over to TNA. Such a... It just felt like a fever dream in all the best kinds of ways. Because I know that in the grand scheme of things, when you compare the WWE's main roster to TNA, TNA is small potatoes. But this always felt like potatoes that Vince McMahon specifically would never allow on WWE's plate. So to see that forbidden door be knocked down, for them to actually do something that we haven't seen since they did it with ECW back in the late 90s, it felt like, I know we've had numerous of these moments where like, we're definitely in a new era. This is definitely the Triple H era. Vince McMahon is definitely out. This felt like one of those moments. This felt like Vince is truly in no way, shape or form in the control room. This is a new era of WWE and how they do business. And I want to see more of it. I want to see more collaborations with more wrestling companies. And it opens the door and it opens the possibility one day, Sancho, as crazy as it sounds, for WWE to collaborate with AEW. As crazy as it sounds right now, it's now, because of this, not a 0% chance. Now we can be that meme of Dumb and Dumber.
You're telling me
there's a chance. Now it's there.
Dude, you got some rose-tinted glasses. We only talked about this a long time ago. It would only happen if it was for charity. I mean, why not, right?
Well, no, I mean, it could happen if it makes money for everybody. This is now...
Yeah, we'll make money for a charity.
We're talking about wrestling organizations, man. They just want to make money. They want to make money for themselves. Go ahead.
What's the best way to prepare a potato?
Listen, I am a boiled potato guy, but I need it peeled. I like peeled, boiled potatoes. Don't talk to me if you just stab it and put it in the microwave. People do that, bro.
You ever had a twice baked potato?
I have.
Delicious.
Very good.
Divine.
You said
potatoes, and now I'm all about it. You got me thinking of food. It's late night. When you get up there in age, Santi, you can't eat late. You can't do it.
It'll catch up
to you quickly. Food catches up to you faster. You got to take over. This is your run. You already took my 6-5, brother.
Oh, that's right. I mean, do you have any thoughts about TNA, NXT, Jordan Grace?
I think the only thing about it is that I feel like it ran out of gas really quickly. Like, they used up so much early, and I wish it got to the main roster. That's my only thing. We had opportunities for TNA to appear on the main roster, but as soon as that we caught wind that it was only staying regulated to NXT, it seemed that everyone seemed not to care as much, unless you watch NXT. And we hinted already in the podcast is like the Joe Hendry gas ran out, and I think so. It could only be revigorated when the Royal Rumble season comes around again, because you could have more TNA people. You could have the Rascals come in, and they could be a great kind of addition, athletic addition to the Rumble. You could have the Jordan Grace to reappear again, even get that longer burn. Joe Hendry would be fantastic. I think Josh Alexander
both free agents.
I think Josh Alexander would be great. I think Moose would be great. There's so much potential for Rumbles, and there's only 30 slots. Mm-hmm. So I think what I'm hoping that people would understand, and I could already hear it in the back of my mind, is people like, oh, I can't believe this TNA person took it. If they were Joe Hendry and he was the newest signing, that would be different. You know what I mean? That's a different story.
Sure.
But I'm just hoping that from that aspect, if it's going to be a top spot of the year to catapult itself to even higher in 2025, it needs to pay off. Because that, to me, is they planted the seed. It needs to pay off in 2025. Or if you look back at it, wouldn't matter much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. For me, it wasn't so much about the execution of what they did when they came over to WWE. It's that they took the step to even allow it.
Sure.
That's sure. Like, that's just like hell freezing over as far as I'm concerned when it comes to WWE's business practices that I've been accustomed to over the past 22 years.
I just wish Jordynne Grace beat Roxanne.
You're asking too much of there, brother.
I was.
No, I get it, but I mean, what if Joe Hendry had beaten Ethan Page for the NXT title at No Mercy?
That would have been cool.
I'm happy with the baby step because it's the first time we ever got the baby step. I wasn't expecting to get them fully sprinting with this yet, but maybe. But what I'm saying is that the window's open. It's no longer a forbidden locked door that can never be open. It's squeaked. It's open. I can see some light in there, Sancho.
What's that? The Frankenstein character on TNA?
PCO. PCO.
Put him in the Rumble.
You want PCO in the Rumble?
Get him. Give him PCO, baby. And have his wifey walk down the line. His KK
yes,
wifey.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
All right. So I guess I'm jumping over to number five. I've got Damian Priest cashing in Money in the Bank. There's just a lot of things at play here. Okay. So sure. I kind of neutered my list a little bit because as a major honorable mention, and honestly, it would be in the top 10, is CM Punk screwing over Drew McIntyre Clash at the Castle, right? The him wearing the ref shirt. I thought that was a great moment.
No. This
that was here? That was that one, yeah. The blowing kiss, that's this moment.
That's Mania, yeah.
That's Mania. I just didn't want to have multiple of Punk screwing over McIntyre in different slots because there's
like four times.
It happened so many times in the year. So I wanted to pick this one because I felt like this had the biggest ripple effect across various things. So you have, of course, Drew McIntyre finally getting his moment, going through like a full cycle of emotion where he is crying. He's happy. He celebrates with his wife, only to remember, oh, wait, Punk is there. Let me go gloat to Punk. Overgloats, gets beat up by Punk. The reveal that Punk can take off his brace and he's starting to be able to get physical back in the ring. Damian's music hits, the sprint, the South of Heaven, new world champion. Bro, that like flash in the pan, like 50 seconds was wild. Absolutely wild. I did a video, Sancho, where I did a tier rank of every single WWE championship reign of 2024. Single individual reign, tag team titles, mid cards, world titles. I put Drew McIntyre's in Hall of Fame. That 5-minute championship reign was Hall of Fame worthy because of how memorable it was. Just those 5 minutes of Drew McIntyre holding the title was way better than the 200 days Judgment Day held the tag titles.
You have to remember as well, it was Drew's moment in front of a crowd.
Yes.
That was a big sell because his first championship was in an empty arena during the pandemic. So that adds a magnitude to that moment.
Big time. Damian Priest getting his big moment after months of being treated like a buffoon as Mr. Money in the Bank. But just like all of those things, right? The reveal of Punk being healthy enough to be physical. Drew McIntyre getting his moment stolen away while also giving Damian his moment. I thought it was just so brilliantly executed. And it's this that gives me hope about Tiffany Stratton's cash-in, because they're literally doing the same thing, making Tiffany Stratton be a complete dumbass as Miss Money in the Bank. It's the same thing that they did with Damian. I'm hoping that it means the cash-in at the end of the tunnel is going to be fantastic for Tiffany.
I know we're being set up for it to be Nia, but what if it was a swerve on Liv and Rhea?
Why not? Sure.
On Netflix, right? You hear, it's Tiffany time. You would freak out. Netflix would be the perfect place for that.
Sure. If she actually cashes it in.
Yeah, I know.
If she actually cashes it in. Here's the thing, man. Great cash-ins are important here. And yeah, like that's the most important part of the of the reign as Mr. or Miss Money in the Bank.
It could save a reign for sure.
Absolutely. But even though the cash-in of Damian Priest was fantastic, let's not ignore the fact that pretty much every championship defense that he had after that, everybody's like, well, Damian's just a transitional paper champion because of how dumb he was as Mr. Money in the Bank. So they had to do still a lot of legwork to fix Damian Priest's overall image as a legit player because of how much they damaged him with all of these failed cash-ins. And they're going to have to do the same with Tiffany. If Tiffany wins this, after months of looking like a jackass, they're going to have to do the same thing of making her this viable champion that you can get behind, which they did a great job with Damian Priest. But that cash-in, brother, one of my favorite cash-ins of all time.
Give it a two-woman power trip, Nia and Tiffy as champions.
That'd be fun. Yeah. That'd be fun. So I guess we're on to... You can get off the bench, brother.
Yeah. The Bloodline turning on Paul Heyman. Madison Square Garden shield bomb right through the table. There's not only that, it's just the entire segment itself. You had a disheveled Paul Heyman, grayed out of his mind, stubble beard, bloodshot eyes, just looking haggard, coming to the ring, trying to cut the promo. And then Solo takes the mic away from him and he goes down the line. He's like, do you acknowledge me? And then you get the great Solo, I love you. You get all those moments, and then it goes to Paul Heyman. And Paul Heyman goes, you are not my tribal chief. And the crowd just goes, all right, it goes crazy. And to think that Paul Heyman, probably the most heel managers you can think of throughout the history of the WWE, to finally get a pop like that, and then he just gets dragged out of the ring. Well, he gets hit. I think he gets moonsaulted on by Jacob Fatu. And he gets hit. Yeah, I didn't know it was a headbutt. Yeah, it was a headbutt. Headbutted by Jacob Fatu, dragged out of the ring, and powerbombed. In that right there, not only made Paul Heyman a face, but it turned Roman even more of a face. At that moment, we were like, ooh, just wait till Roman comes back. So that right there is my number four. Please tell me you have this on your list.
I don't, because I have so... I guess I'll spoil it. My top four are Bloodline things.
So I didn't want to. Your five.
I know. I wanted to have a little bit of diversity, and I did. Honestly, it's in the same boat as Punk and McIntyre, the referee spot, where it's just like, yeah. I to make this a bit more interesting for everybody watching, I purposely left it out. That is absolutely a top 10 moment for me under most circumstances. Absolutely. I'm glad I don't have it, because now I don't get to be on the bench. I get to keep going.
Yeah, keep going, dude. Keep going.
But yeah, dude, that moment was awesome. The way he delivered the, you are not my tribal chief. and
threw down the mic.
And the way that he like purposely disheveled himself physically, mm-hmm. right? Like the bags mm-hmm. under his eyes, the not just fermenting his hair. So yeah. good. So damn
and the,
good.
And the power bomb was good. It was like a...
They didn't hold back.
Yeah, they did not hold back. And there was that moment where he was on... I think he was, yeah, Solo. Yeah, and it was Solo that did it too. And it was special.
And I like the point that you made. I felt like that definitely created more of an appetite to see Roman Reigns come back as a babyface. It created the appetite to see the return of Paul Heyman when that was going to happen. And that was, to me, the biggest moment in the lead up to War Games as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of cool stuff that kind of came about from the back of this.
Mm-hmm. What's your number four?
My number four, again, it's all of this stuff just sort of interwoven. It, honestly, sure. I close my eyes and I have a hard time remembering like the order of all of these things.
I got you.
Okay. I have at number four, the debut of the Samoan werewolf, Jacob Fatu.
That's my number three.
Oh my God, brother. How sick was that? Coming. let's just both go off on it, since it's both of our top fives here. The way that, like, it's so funny to think about Solo just like it in the corner, right? Cowering because yeah. top baby faces are surrounding him. And then I'm sorry for those that are audio listeners that won't be able to see this. Ha 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 ha! He's just maniacally laughing, right?
so good. This was before Paul Heyman's shield bomb.
That was before, yeah, of course, yeah, because Jacob was part of the dismantling of Paul Heyman. But seeing Jacob go out there and demolish the top three baby faces of Friday Night SmackDown is something I'm never going to forget. And what's crazy about that as well is that it was off the back of an also amazing debut of the Wyatt Six. So just that whole week was just unbelievably good. And to bookend it with one of the most memorable, most dominant debuts that I've ever seen was just so special, dude.
You have to remember as well, we heard rumors that he was signed. We were doing homework on this dude. Everybody was telling, hey, Jacob Fatu is legit. He is the real deal. Just you wait. I think it was X-Pac that said as well, like, he's legit. Like, you're going to freak out when you see this guy. And then for him to come out and nail everything that was promised. Like, it was promised and delivered three times over. He was a force of nature, and he was unexpectedly scary and unexpectedly perfect. Perfect. He hit everything perfectly.
Right down to the last minute detail.
Perfect. And not only that, we just came off of Tongaloa. So we weren't expecting much.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting much. And the way he debuted was so different from Tamatanga, Tongaloa, Jimmy and Jay when they interviewed, even Solo Sikoa. He did it his own way. And when you have to think about it in the term of the business, when you have Cody, Randy, and KO putting you over that way, you're legit.
Yeah.
And you're legit.
I remember they had him signed for months. Yeah. So as early as like Backlash, bro, we were waiting for him. And nothing and nothing and nothing. And then in the lead up to Money in the Bank, this dude seemingly comes out of nowhere and not only impresses the hell out of all of us with his amazing debut, but then he goes on to consistently just have these like once in a lifetime stare downs with seemingly everybody.
Yes. I don't care. Dude, you can stare down Logan Paul. I'd be like, yes.
Dude, yes. Dude, he stares down Tozawa. I'm like, WrestleMania.
I heard Tozawa. Imagine if Tozawa went for his high senton and just Jacob Fatu just destroys him out of midair. Like, oh, my God.
Oh, man. I'm glad that we both have this.
That's my number three. It's my number three.
That's your number three.
What's your number three then?
I'll go with my number three.
Yes.
Happened in the same week. I've got the debut of the Wyatt Six. Look, everything they've done afterwards, meh. Very meh. Very meh. But man, that debut, I don't think I've rewatched a debut to try and look for Easter eggs as much as I rewatched the debut of the Wyatt Six. Bro, I was stopping frame by frame after it happened just to see like, ooh, what's that? Who's that? Ooh, is Triple H down on the ground? Did they also attack Triple H? Ooh, is that a member of production, or was that a referee, or is that a Braun Strowman? Where's that referee? I went frame by freaking frame trying to analyze that debut. But the cinematography of it, the music, the reveal of every single individual member with what was still new and novel at the time, the continuous non-breaking camera shot that they now do like really often. It was still pretty like new then, but then seeing them do it with what seemed like they went into an alternate reality and the reveal of every character.
That's what I was hoping for.
That's what I was hoping for as well. I'm not here to defend the Wyatt Six beyond this debut. I'm literally just the 5 minutes of the initial Wyatt Six debut is something I will not forget. And it does suck that they've not been able to capitalize on it because that debut was unforgettable.
I have nothing to add to it.
No, yeah, you weren't as over on it as I was.
It's because it's like they had an opportunity to make it believable in a sense of like I've always thought because of the way the vignettes, you have to remember the QR codes, the vignettes, all those things was leading to that this is a person that operated outside the rules of the WWE. And then you have like this wipeout situation scene with Chad Gable, and then you thinking, okay, great, Chad Gable is going to be turned around because he's like American Alpha Academy and he's being so evil to Otis, and nothing happened from that. You know what I mean?
That's you don't like the what I said I don't like either, which was You're everything right. afterwards. Right, I'm talking like about ever, the but, moment, the
but
debut.
The moment was cool. And they had a fun time, but it's like it felt like they thought about that moment more so than where were they going to go.
Bro, that moment got, you could tell, so much more tender love and care than everything else that they've done. Peaked in high school. They peaked in high school. They're never going to top that.
We got to agree, though, what hurt them the most was the 2-hour Raw.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. Like, not using them in October is such a miss. Such a miss. I'm trying to find like a good analogy for this. It's like I feel like they're gonna be Carly Rae Jepsen, you know, one hit wonder. Call Me Maybe. Wow. It's the only thing. I feel like they're not gonna be able to come anywhere near close topping their initial hit single, which was their debut.
Bold statement.
Yeah,
bold statement.
Bold statement. You're number two.
I'm going to save my number two just in case it is your number one.
Sure, go for it.
So what is your number two? I'm going to save it. What's your number two?
Okay, you want me to go with my number two? My number two is Jey Uso winning the Intercontinental Championship.
Ooh, okay.
Wait, do you not have this?
Nope, I don't have it.
Ooh, I really thought you were going to. Yeah, Jey Uso winning the Intercontinental Championship. I missed it. I didn't even watch it live, brother. I had to watch the replay of it because it just came out of freaking nowhere. You and I have talked about on this podcast before how much we want to see any given Monday come back, any given Friday, where anytime you tune in, championships could change, storylines could advance majorly, needles can move, people can turn heel, babyface. It just sort of felt like we hadn't gotten that in a really long time because we gotten used to and complacent with long championship reigns. Mm-hmm. And we thought for sure Bron Breakker was going to have a long championship reign. It's Bron Breakker. It's the guy that was like made out of chisel and marble to be your next long reigning intercontinental champion. And then to have Jey Uso finally win a big one, win a singles championship gold in a match that no one was expecting a championship change is going to be something that lives rent free in my head for a really long time.
14 years in the making. And I think I echo everything you said about any given Monday. I mean, I made a video essay on it because it's the one missing piece in Triple H's booking. Is that's where he gets so predictable that he saves a lot of major milestone moments in PLEs. But to be fair, it's like a weird, you know, will they, won't they type of situation, because we complain when something happens on a random Monday Night Raw, like a title change or a match, like, for example, Chad Gable versus Otis. I was like, this feels so random. I wish it was more pumped into it. But then you get these kind of moments that you will remember forever because you were there. It's kind of like, a nod to you for your loyalty type of thing. And I think like it was one of my, I think we said best booking decision award, just to give away that, because it was earned. It felt really justified. And I think more than ever, Jey Uso needs to return back into that picture. He is lost right now, man. Even though he gets the best pops and he's considered the most popular guy, I still think he's floundering. That was his peak of the year in 2024. And putting him back in the bloodline, which we thought would be the great play for him, and especially for War Games, I don't think it turned out for him the best. I think he has suffered the most out of it, because look at what's everybody doing after War Games, right? Sami Zayn has been on his high horse, going after everybody, like doing his thing, and Jey Uso has just seemingly on the wayside. And so I'm hoping that Jey could recapture this, and I think he will. And main event Jey Uso is definitely someone that could be a heavyweight champion in one day, considering the only kind of thing that tarnished his IC title is when he made his first promo, and it kind of fell a little flat because he got a little emotional, and that's not the reason why it fell, but I think he never really tapped into that vulnerability of being a champion, and he hid behind the Yeet gimmick, where I wish it was just Jey speaking as himself, being a 14 year in the waiting champion.
I think keep going.
Because I think that's where, for me, I think that's where there was like a slight disconnect in that moment. Like, what does it mean to you, dog? Like, truthfully, what does it mean to you for to be an intercontinental champion? And he was there, but it took him too long to get there. But I still have high hopes for Jey Uso in 2025.
I think Jey Uso is going to have a huge 2025. I think for me, what was criminal about this, even though I love the moment him winning and how out of nowhere it felt, was that they pulled the trigger on his championship win for it to just be a setup to build up to something else, which was Survivor Series War Games. They pulled the trigger on something that we've been waiting for so long, and it was just a Jenga block in a bigger story, and it wasn't his story. And that kind of sucks, but it doesn't take away from the fact that I freaking love the championship win.
That, and I think one from what I remember, USA cut the thing so early. Like, he didn't have like a, yeah, and then like a long celebration. It wasn't literally, it wasn't that. It was like,
yeah,
Jey Uso wins and we're in.
And we're done. We're out of here.
It was literally that from what I remember. But that frees me up for my number one. And I think you and I might agree, Santiago, my friend. It's actually my number two. You're number one. I'm betting this right now. It's the Final Bosses beatdown on Cody Rhodes, baby. That takes my number two spot because it is the traditional way of, you know, beating someone down, violence, using all that kind of stuff. And it was done by the freaking Rock brother. And we talked about it so many times on this podcast. I talked to you in private about this, but it was so anime. The rain, the Rock just obliterating Cody, no one stopping him, no dumb referees, no producer. It was the Final Boss at his work, Versace laid out, Mama Rhodes, all that. It was cinema. It was cinema, dude. And that let me know that we're back. That was like, we're back, baby. You talked about one of those moments where Triple H is in charge. I was like, this is a Triple H move. This is an old school Triple H move that understood what the Attitude Era was. And it was the Rock doing it. And the Rock telling the world that I'm here to play and I'm here to be the heel in this story because I am a professional wrestler. And that's what's awesome.
I love when the camera shut off and like then we saw the post on social media. Oh, you think because the cameras are off that the Final Boss is going to stop?
That.
Yeah, it's so good. And poor Bobby Roode with basically just hand on his dick, just like, okay, I guess we're still going. We still got to keep the character going. I cheated for my number one. You're just going to be mad. It's part of my number one.
Okay. Or did you do the entire Bloodline Dragons? You always do this. You did this last year too. I hate you. You did Cody Rhodes finishing the story, I believe, or whatever. WrestleMania 39. I think that's what you did.
Well, what's your number one?
My number one was New Day. New Day and the Bro Heartbreak.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So yeah, we can spend some time talking about this. I'll tell you what I have. I have Cody wins undisputed title. / Mama Rhodes / the WrestleMania 40 press conference. I'm like, all of this. This is all the same shit. It's all the same thing. It's building all to the same thing. I can't separate it all. That whole look, Sancho, I basically have it as a number one, all of that. And I know it's cheating because there's so many moments within there. But I have it as that because I don't feel like I've ever seen a buildup to Mania like that. I really think that that is the greatest buildup to a WrestleMania of all time. Everything that we saw leading into it, the in the rain Mama Rhodes beatdown, the promos between them in the ring, the press conference was just broke the freaking internet. Literally, you know, we had the stuff with the
Pat McAfee,
the Cody wrote the Pat McAfee stuff, the We Want Cody movement. That whole buildup, I don't think you'll ever be able to do something special like that again. It feels like an impossibility to think of something as good, let alone better than that, ever again. So it's just my number one, just the whole thing, all of it.
I mean, you can't manufacture that. No. There's no way. They stumble upon gold or liquid oil. Like, it was that hot.
And liquid oil?
Yeah, look at oil. And they wrote that. Texas tea.
I know. The term is liquid gold, not liquid oil. Oil's already liquid.
Why do you have to do this to me?
No, you said somebody else. Somebody was thinking of it. Somebody was typing in the comments.
Do you think of people when they write a comment? I always do that. When I read a comment, I go, this person typed this out.
The guy that said you're unwatchable, he put the letters together to say that to you.
Does he know that he's stuck with me for so many like months? Does he know the damage of reputation?
That comment has stuck with Sancho for so long. You know, you mentioned that you can't manufacture. You know what's funny? The one part that everyone remembers to me is the most manufactured part. Cena coming out, then The Rock, then Taker, then Shield Seth Rollins. Obviously, it's awesome, but like that to me, that's like, out of all the things that you've done, out of all of the really cool organic things that I feel can never be manufactured, this was manufactured. Do I love it? Hell yeah. I'm still here for it. But that was probably the most manufactured part of that whole buildup, of that whole thing.
And it's, what's crazy as well is like they waited the last minute to use Taker. Like they were waiting and hoping and praying that Austin would show up like that night. And literally Taker, what showed up in his... He wasn't taking on Dead Man, which he said later, like, it made more sense to him to be dressed as himself because he is the locker room guy. But I think that's what's special about wrestling. And I think that is going to be the theme of 2024 because we've seen so many different outlets or different forms of entertainment try to capture that fun and that excitement. Because look at Tyson and Paul. We were looking for that moment where Tyson was going to turn back the clock. And it didn't happen. But that's what makes wrestling special. We can manufacture that moment. We could take everything that was organic and compartmentalize
it. That's a hard word. Compartmentalize it.
Yeah. Throw that bad boy all together. And then ship it out. It's a special time. A couple of ones that didn't make my list, I just want to go over quickly, was LA Knight's home invasion. One time.
That's so good.
And what he did to Logan Paul when he was in the pool.
This is great.
Jade Cargill's Rumble debut was nice.
Yep.
Braun Breaker squashing Dante was amazing. Because remember that moment in the turnbuckle? He was like, I got to do this again. I don't want to do this again. I hate these kind of matches. AJ Styles' fake retirement. Gunther calling out Goldberg was amazing.
Stop. The last
that was great, dude.
You're just trying to... manufacture. Manifest Goldberg versus Gunther at Mania. Yes, you are. You want this to happen at Mania, and I hate it.
And then the last one I have is Logan Paul drone shot on the Cody Rhodes splash at King of the Ring. That was awesome. That little 360 drone, and then him spitting out the prime, and then nailing that. Yeah. But you got to put on the list speed.
Yeah, that's top honorable mention. It's speed. It was so funny.
I watched it again after we talked about it last week, and the little top of the bottle cap just flies like into the corner.
Dude, that Sparta kick is so damn good.
Wow, man, that's the top 10 list. I want to do something different here to wrap up this episode. We still got a good chunk if you're worried about it. Just random predictions. Now, did you write down a list? I wrote down a list.
I have nothing. I'm going to have to make these up on the spot. Whoa, where the hell did my voice go?
Whoa, I don't know. You.
I went into where's the detonator? Where?
All right. Here's my 2020 predictions. Is this a safe place?
No, never.
Dominic Mysterio will become heavyweight champion.
I love it. I'm already on board.
Yes. All right. Here's another one. Jade Cargill will become women's champion.
I could see it. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Bayley, Charlotte, and Becky will become a faction in 2025.
Fortune.
They will do that because it would be a way to draw back Miss Sasha Banks.
Miss Sasha Banks.
I mean, think about it.
Right. CEO.
You have to think about it. What drew Edge or to AEW besides money?
FTR?
Work with Christian.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Here's another one. Chad Gable will shave his head.
Is that too on the nose?
No, it's a prediction.
I know, but like I'm saying, if Chad Gable were to do that, is that too on the nose for what he's trying?
Dude, he's already wearing the colors and the singlet, and he has the.
That's why I'm saying, is that too now on the nose? Like just he's too on the nose.
You know, it'd be cool if he wishes he was his son. Like that would be a cool, like a desperation angle that in your heart. It wasn't.
They'd have to bring
a way to fix it, right?
Yeah, they'd have to bring back Jason Jordan into the storyline.
He's already there. He's like, you know, in your heart,
Sancho. I can hear you vent 2 seconds.
Okay, That would be a thing. Here's my other one right here. I will predict that the WWE will announce a PLE in Mexico City, headlined by Rey Mysterio, Penta, and Dominic Mysterio in a triple threat match. And it's going to be Hair versus Mask, triple threat, and Dom will lose his mullet at this PLE. And that will be the major thing. They've been all over the world. They've been in France. They've been in Glasgow. Mexico is a prime spot to have WWE talent. I mean, you would have Stephanie Vacker there. And with the new signing of Penta, this would be a prime spot. And this would be a great coming out party for Dominic Mysterio to enter into the main event. But what a crazy PLE. And, dude, you think a crowd out there like France is loud? Just wait till you get Mexico City, baby, into that. And they have one of the biggest stadiums. That would be my prediction. A PLE in Mexico.
I obviously have no information on this, but does it feel like there is some sort of like barrier preventing WWE from going to Mexico? Like CMLL, Triple A having
They did in house shows.
House shows aside. They've done house shows there. Yeah. But like it seems obvious to have a major show in Mexico and they've never done it. The only thing that I can think of is that they just aren't allowed. They just don't give them the venues. Like there's a monopoly there.
What would work if there was one at San Diego? I mean, that's as close as you're going to get.
Sure.
Or Laredo. That's just even closer. But I think there's going to be like a Mexican-themed PLE. Here's another one. I feel NXT will invade WWE at one point in 2020.
Oh, I hope they do that again.
There's just too much talent in NXT that's being stockpiled that they have to do something, interject them into the main event for a little bit, for like a little PLE cycle. It stopped me if you think of one while I'm going down this list.
No, I already made, I made a YouTube video on this. I'm just pulling up my YouTube video here.
Okay. If you think of something new, you know, just share with the class.
Yeah.
Liv Morgan will turn on Dominic Mysterio in 2025.
I think Liv Morgan turned. No, man. Dom is the one that does the turning.
No.
Dom's forever heel, bro.
Yeah, I know, but it has to be Liv to kick him out, to make him like a more crappy heel, like a desperate heel. And to have that, they kind of hinted at it when Rhea turned. Remember, he did the roses thing to Rhea, like Eddie does, the kind of stuff. I think this is important for Liv Morgan and important for Dom to separate at some point, whether it be Liv or Dom, but that would be another.
The direct link to.
Here's another one. Hear me out.
I'm hearing you.
Miro will make his debut to join Gunther to make a new Imperium 2.0. Miro's been gone for like years.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Everywhere. And this would be a great opportunity for Gunther to create a two-man type of power trip with Miro, a.k.a. Rusev.
Rusev, Putria, Rusev, Patria.
Were you confused on Monday Night Raw when Ludwig was about to introduce Gunther? I was like, I thought you let him go like a Pokemon. What's going on?
But he didn't introduce Gunther.
But he did the whole lady.
For himself. Yeah. For himself, man. It's his gimmick. Okay, I'll give you a couple. Drew McIntyre has a feud with Roman Reigns and wins.
Wow.
Wins.
The Punisher finally gets his due.
I think so. Look, if they are not able to get The Rock for Raw Netflix, I'm immediately jumping on the bandwagon that it needs to be Drew versus Roman at WrestleMania.
What do you think The Rock's doing? Just sitting there and waiting for more money?
I don't know, man. Probably wearing a bodysuit, even though he's already jacked for Moana.
Did you know that Red Notice is one of the most top-viewed Red Flick?
What a horrible movie. Oh, my goodness. It's so bad. Good for him that it made money. It's just so bad. I'm just saying, if he's not available...
And first off, Moana, and it makes sense. Maui has tattoos that that would be impossible to do because they're CGI. He has a little Maui that moves around to show all the feats of Maui, brother. You think that he could do makeup for 8 hours? No, The Rock's busy, dude. What's wrong with a bodysuit?
You done?
Get over it.
Okay. I also have Carmelo Hayes winning Money in the Bank. And I have Melo in the Bank. And
I like that.
Similar to your Jade Cargill one, but I have her winning the Queen of the Ring in 2025.
So you're not giving her, you're giving her flowers, but not the whole bouquet.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah. But I want her to. That means at SummerSlam, then she gets that title match. I also have an NXT one, a couple of NXT ones. I do think that we get Ricky Starks in NXT in 2025. And he gets the Ethan Page treatment right to the very top. I have...
will it be when Ethan Page is still at NXT or Ethan Page move on to the main roster by the time Ricky Starks?
I think he'll already be moved on. I think he'll already be moved on. I have the women main eventing NXT's biggest show of the year. I feel like the women will close out NXT Stand and Deliver in 2025. The big talking point of NXT the whole year has been how crazy stacked the women's division is. I bet that they give them the main event of Stand and Deliver. I bet that they close their WrestleMania. I think it's going to be Stephanie Vacker versus Roxanne Perez versus Julia. I think that they big triple threat match. It was a women's triple threat match that main evented WrestleMania. So I feel like they could kind of play on that note again.
Can I piggyback on this one?
Hit me.
Sol Ruka will debut on the main roster and feud with Chelsea Green.
Disagree. I think Sol Ruka still has a year of seasoning left, but...
A year?
Yeah, character-wise. Dude, everybody thought that Bron Breakker was ready a long time before he got called up. And then they kept him down there for another year to work on his character, turn heel, and just be a character rather than just a monster in the ring. And it helps so much. So much. Sol Ruka, from a character standpoint, she could benefit from being there longer. In-ring, doesn't need to be.
What I mean. I think her being like this all-American girl going for the United States title means a lot.
I don't think so.
Appearance-wise.
I think that they keep her there for a while. I think that they do.
This one's controversial.
Hit me.
The WWE Speed Champion will be sunsetted. They won't do it anymore.
I guess it depends on whatever the deal looks like with X, right? Because that's an X deal.
But I think like once they get rolling with Netflix, it's going to be like no one cares even more.
Can I give you a wild one?
Sure. Give me a wild one.
We get Matt Cardona in WWE in 2024. In 2025. With Chelsea Green as champion, bro, come on. It's time for Matt Cardona to make the leap.
There's rumors that he's going to sign with AEW, though.
Oh, that'd be dumb. Get people, you're a big commodity everywhere, but the place where you are perfect, WWE. It's WWE. I want him to come home.
It's funny because I just... He said that like The Rock.
That's what I was going for.
I saw him in the Rumble against CM Punk, and he just gets tossed out of the ring. But it's funny to see him in that Zack Ryder ring gear where it's like one pant leg and one exposed, and that Chelsea Green does the same thing too. That's awesome. That's love.
Good stuff.
And will you wear my same ring gear one day?
Would I what?
Wear my same ring gear one day.
Would I wear your same ring gear?
Ring gear.
Are you asking if we would wear the same ring gear, you and me?
Like Matt Cardona and Chelsea Green to show how much you love me.
Sure, I would do that for you.
Sweet. Thank you.
I would do that for you. Last one. I'm saying that both Jordynne Grace and Joe Hendry move over to WWE.
I have Joe Hendry will make the top five in this year's Rumble.
Oh, I like that.
Top four.
Top five.
And I have that Jordynne Grace will become a singles champion in 2025. Could be IC title, USA, US title.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. Do you think she goes main roster now that she's had the time in NXT?
Yeah, she has to be a main roster because the main roster desperately needs her. They really do. They still do.
NXT does not need her at all. No. You're right.
If you look at the IC tournament, it was a little bit for at least during the triple threat stage. And even the SmackDown one was a little bit of that moment. Not saying that they're not great. It's just Jordynne Grace would be a great addition. And the 3 hours on both Raw and SmackDown would be.
Yeah. The fact that in one of the triple threat matches, you had to rely on B-Fab, who ended up being awesome, by the way.
Yes, I agree.
I'm just saying, we're like, what the? My thought was like, this is how you know that the women's division is thin if you have to rely on a manager who ended up showing out. And then same with Electra Lopez.
A name I haven't heard in a while.
Carmen Electra? Yeah. You know. Good times.
Do you want one that will trigger you, brother?
Oh, buddy, I'm here.
PFC will dissolve.
Shut up.
Into a new faction with a new leader, and they'll be called the Smoking Aces.
It's
a great name.
No, just kill it. Kill it.
I said dissolve.
Yeah, but what? But then you want to reform it again. Gross.
It's like where you click a thing and cross dissolve, like when you're editing a video. Cross dissolve. Last one is Ludwig versus Gunther will happen at some point.
Okay.
It'd be a fun little heel versus heel. And my last one, just for you, Santi, John Cena. And I'm going to make a video about this. I finally figured out, Santi, 2025, what my YouTube wrestling channel is going to be. And you may hate this, but I think that I'm going to do some video essays, and this is it right here. I already told you this, but I really believe it. John Cena will go on an epic losing streak to create an aura of desperate superstar trying to hold on to his old glory, and he'll have an ultimate underdog story to recapture his gold, and he will lose to a ruthless Randy Orton or Drew McIntyre.
I hate it. It's not going to happen. Can I give you my Cena one?
Sure.
Cena wins the tag titles with R-Truth at some point, thus R-Truth completing his childhood dream.
You cannot give Cena all the gold.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. This is my fantasy booking. These are my predictions. I can do what I want. He's going to win it all. As if, dude, as if you really tried to tell me you can't give Cena. Yes, I can.
This is from John Cena's X account. This is the last one for the year. Ooh. 2024 for us. Ooh, unless you're if you're a Patreon member, you would get this right before the new year. Think about it. People are listening to this on Friday. Spending to show others your wealth is the fastest way to decrease wealth.
So don't flex, kids.
So if you ask John Cena to buy you steak dinner, he's going to say no. He's going to be like, think about the journey we had together. Be like, yeah, but John, I really want an expensive steak dinner.
No.
Being with me is enough the journey. Well, man, that's what I got. That's my predictions I have. I think I'm going to nail at least one of them. And a lot of people won't believe in me, but I predicted I saw in the tea leaves.
You're such a martyr. A lot of people won't believe in me. Shut up.
They won't, because I said Cody Rhodes went in business for himself. I was one of the early ones that called it out. Remember when I came back and my big return to Wrestling is Cool Pie, I said, hey, Cody went into business for himself. No one else was saying it. And I was right.
Nope, don't recall.
And then I was right. Is that the meme of the year for The Rock?
No, meme of the year is Mama Rhodes, bro. It's everything else. Bloodline rules.
I don't know. Ray made a good run.
Yeah. Well, Ray's is a Wrestling is Cool meme of the year potential. That's an us thing. Oh, question. That Eddie.
Oh, question.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me. Looking deep into my eyes. Does Karrion Kross get gold?
No. I don't think he needs gold. I don't think that's his character at all. One of my predictions is that we get Karrion Kross in his own singles PLE match in 2025. But I don't think he's a character that is out there to win singles accolades, it seems.
Okay.
That's my thoughts. Oh, shall we wrap this up here, Sancho?
Yeah. I don't, since this is like the end of the year, we already did our new heat order for the year. We're going to stick with it. And a lot of people wanted LA Knight. It's a top 10, dude. It's a tough list to crack. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not everybody could get into the dance.
Not even your guy, man. That's crazy. You're such a fake fan.
You would never have written it all. You would have fought tooth and nail.
Yeah, I wouldn't have let him on. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Patrons.
All right, folks. Well, thank you so much for supporting us. If you're over on Patreon, patreon.com/SantiZamp. Again, you get a whole host of extra content that never gets seen anywhere else. At just $5. $5 gets you in the door and gets you all of the content that we do.
We have over 400 posts on Patreon, by the way.
Yep. Actually, we've had to go to Patreon and say, can we please have more storage space? They've already said we can't come back to them, but we're coming back to them.
You think they know that I uploaded hours of Royal Rumble?
I know. Oh, man. Hopefully they never look at our Patreon.
At like 30 gigs and upload.
Oh, God.
Hey, it's pristine. It looks nice.
It does look nice. But folks, if you did want to support extra, we have the $15 tier, and these are our producers. We watched our movie night with them the other day, but they also get their names read out here at the end of the show as a producer. So thank you goes out to Let Me Talk Tua. Yeah. Okay. Sancho Mania running wild. F.U. Santiam first. Akira Kemp. Akai is gone. Alejandro. Alex Rigel. Santi can't pronounce Alex Rigel. Alex. Alexander Dawson. Alan Crockett. Anita Maxwin. Antoni. Ashley Ronell. I've just always said Ashley. I haven't said her last name before. Asperlitz, Ozzy Kingslayer, Austin Baker, Austin Gregory, Austin Theories, Theorist, RIP MatBad, Authentic Chocolate, Ian Dash, Deshaun, Bailey Saunders, Batsy, Ben Calloway, Ben Farton. Sorry, the Ben Farton really got me this week.
You think Ricardo Rodriguez comes back to be Penta's mouthpiece?
That'd be kind of cool. No, I don't think so, though. Barry, Be Hostile, Big Shy, Blast Pass 64, Blue Bot, Bluefish, Brad, Brady Keaton, Brandon, Brian Ibarra, Bry Guy, Bryce Burt, Bunker Jonesy Loves WWE, Caleb Lee, Callis Caven, Cameron Noel, Cameron Talks WWE, Carlos Gonzalez, CB, Change My Name because Santi can't say Dutch words, Chew Poppy, Chimchar's Collectibles, Chris Butner, Lucas, Christian, it's Christian, Christian Billick, Christian G, CM Puff, Colin O'Malley, Colin Roach, conductor of the Penta train. We got a new train entering the station, Sancho. Connor Williamson, Daniel Who, Dar, Dark Flame, DJ Broadnags, Dom Should Win Everything, Drew Baumgarn, Duck Slave, Dumsky, Dylan Kana, El Joshi, Emmanuel Holmes, Aaron Thorne, ISAGE Playoffs, Bolts. How about them boys, Sancho? Jesus. Oh, you guys suck ass. Can you apologize to me for all the horrible things you said about the Chargers? You said they were they suck. They weren't going to make the playoffs. You're going
to lose in the playoffs horribly.
At least we made it.
Horribly.
At least we made it. Will you apologize if they win a playoff game? Will you apologize if they win in their first playoff game?
I'm so happy your itty-bitty franchise made the playoffs. Congratulations. Ooh, enjoy the playoffs. Wow.
Dude, you're never coming back from this if we somehow win the Super Bowl. You're never coming back from this if we win the Super Bowl.
I'll give you.
Say it.
Hold on. 20 gifted.
If the Chargers win the Super Bowl. Okay. All right. Bet. Fletcher Walpole, Floating, Forever Wrestling, Franklin L. Everett, Gamerscape, Gavin TV, I think. Jordan Valdez, Gilbert Deans, Goofy Goober, GX Amen, Heartfelt, Hoodie Cam, I Miss Jerry Show. Imagine if Santi got a low taper fade.
I hate that so much. Jeez, I hope that stays in 2024, please.
Yeah, please. I don't want that coming into 2025. Is it, David? It's Chief Season, baby. Jack Gibley, Jackson, Jacob Pena, Jacob Stapple.
Is that person's disgusting? Chief Season, baby? Get out of here.
Get out of here.
No one wants to watch another Chiefs Super Bowl.
Agreed. Dakota Gamblin, Jaden Davis, Jaden, Jada, Jake Chavoya, Chavoya, James Brian Balago, Jasim Alcazar, Javier Rodriguez, Jalen Steele, Jesse Gibson, Joe Velez, Joe Romig, Jolly Green Giant, Jordan Lynch, Jordy Marte, Josby, Jose Santi's cousin, Joseph Pointer, Josh Sutton, Juan Verduzco, Judson Daniels, Juicy J, Justin Courtright, Justin Perkins, Caden Rivers, Ken Dean, Kassuz, Kuwaiti Rig Boogs, Kyrie Lawrence, Lil Shifu, Luke Parker, Luke Sika, Manly Man, Mario, Marnie YCSM, Matthew Dalla is all I need, Matthew Feth, Matthew Oberg, Matthew Watkins, Mekki, Michael Purnell, Miguel Paredes, Mikey Rada, Minega, Mitchell Harris, Mitchell X, Muhammad Albanai, Monte Moore, Nathaniel Stevenson, Neb, Nellen Zach, Nicholas Kyle, Noah Burden, Obi Nobi, Osama Awad, Pat R., Pat McMark, Pim Kaw, Frody, Punk Fan, Puppet Spanker Johnson, Raffle, Reaper God, Ricky Dutcher, RKO, Robert Rogers, Royce Ruffo, Riley, Santi wants Sancho to give him the glaze. Saudi Rick Boogs, Scream of Scott, Semba, Seth, Shaggy WWE, Sip God, Sir Nightmare, Skylar Brashears, Slow Toke Rodriguez, Solo, I love you, Solo, Solo, fuck you, Summer, Spicy Nugget, Squirt Angle, Stephanie Vaquer Lookalike Contest in My Bedroom, Stone Cold P. Shawson, Stucky, Sugar Shane, Sugar Super Malachi Galaxy, The Best in the World, Julian La Monica, the first Patreon I Crazy Dude, The Gaming Freak YouTube, The Lewis Brand, The Undertaker Son, The Underwear Taker, Thiam is a Dutch name that Santi can't say correct, Tim Rodriguez, Tobias Burnett, Tom Lehman, Tommy, Trenhead, Tyler Free, V Charles, Vegan Penguin, Juan Pablo, White Mexican, Woe JC, Javier Izquierdo, Zax Mira, Deadshot, Zach Griffin, Zay2K, and Zerg Zito. Thank you all so much for supporting us the way that you do. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode of the Wrestling is Cool podcast. You folks take care. Happy New Year. And be wonderful people.